The Batman Part 2 has been delayed all the way to October 2026. The remake of The Crow dropped its first trailer. And Scream 7 is back in action as Neve Campbell returns as Sydney Prescott in the latest film. Let's get into this week's movie news.
What's up, movie friends? Welcome back to Raiders of the Lost Podcast, the ultimate film and TV podcast. There are a lot of stories to go over this week, some really cool trailers and some rumors. But first, let's get into that box office.
And let's
office.
Take it slow, Anthony.
Easy.
Unlike last time,
last
you
week.
Came running and gunning. Take it easy.
I'm smooth sailing.
Nice and slow, pal. Let's do the first one. So Kung Fu Panda just beat Dune Part 2 at the box office.
I was almost right with my prediction.
Yeah,
I said Dune Part 2 would take it over.
Kung Fu Panda 4, 2 weeks in a row at the top of the box office. Domestic, it pulled $31 million in its second weekend, which is it's pretty damn solid.
That's awesome.
Pretty damn solid for a second weekend. Dune Part 2 just barely lost out $29 million in its third weekend at the box office.
I want to recount. The word of mouth for both films is very good, and then Dune Part 2 on its third weekend making that much is just a very good sign that audiences are loving it.
Domestic. What's its international total at? Do you know?
It's over 300. It's got to be.
Let me check it.
Because it might be just under 300.
It was 220 last week when we talked about it.
It might be around there. I know that it's closing in on, it beat out $150 million on domestic totals so far, so it's definitely
$396 million global right now.
Fantastic.
Which is excellent for freaking 2 weeks out in theaters. That's so, so good.
I bet it hits $700 million.
It could be.
Yeah,
it's not really dropping that much in percentage because it was last week was like $35 million at the box office, right?
Keep in mind, Chalamet's other big hit the past year, Wonka, didn't debut as big of an opening as Dune. It just had legs, and it earned $600 million globally.
It never left theaters.
It's still in theaters.
It's always been in theaters.
Get out of there, Wonka!
We should do a Chalamet double feature. Go see Wonka, then see Dune Part 2.
Well, Migration's finally out of the top 10, so...
Thank God. Sick of those ducks, man. Sick of those ducks. Just fly home.
But the ducks were replaced by another animal this week with Arthur and the King, Mark Wahlberg's new film, based on a true story of triathlon athletes who are joined up by a little pup who helps lead the way on faster routes on their huge quest. And it came in third place with $9 million. Pretty respectable.
For its budget, which was around, like, I think $20 million. So that seems like it'll probably be a profitable film in the long run. That's $9 million
domestic. Very cute. It looks very cute.
It does look very cute.
Very touching.
Fourth place, we have another, seems to be, teen horror film from Blumhouse. This time we have Imaginary. It pulled $5 million at the box office, which is pretty decent on a budget of just $10 million, so I'm sure a couple weeks of this and they'll turn to the green. So another horror, it looks like, hit for Blumhouse in terms of a return on investment, probably.
Although it does not have the cultural relevance as the last few hits it's had in terms of Megan and the
Five Nights at Freddy's.
Nobody's talking about Imaginary.
But it seems like it'll probably pull a profit. It's about to hit its budget, so I could see that pulling, you know, green and becoming a hit.
Another huge hit, but... Yeah, another very profitable film is Cabrini, which is at $3 million, roughly, in its fourth weekend now. Mm-hmm. So very good hold on that.
Another very low-budget film.
Yeah. And we have two new independent releases coming out this week. Love Lies Bleeding, the A24 film, came in sixth place with a pretty modest $2.7 million on 1,200 screens across the country. So it's a 1.3 thousand per theater average, which is not very good when you release this wide. Another film that also opened to a disappointing number was The American Society of the Magical...
Can we say that? I don't want to say it.
I don't want to say it. I'm not having that on the internet.
I'm not.
What, are you kidding me?
The American Society of Magical, you know what.
It opened to $1.7 million with a $1,000 per theater average, a very low amount for a wide release. So those two films not quite getting what they were hoping for with their huge wide releases. And it doesn't seem like word of mouth for the latter film is very good at all. It's getting very dismal reviews from critics and audiences alike. Love Lies Bleeding, it has a bit of a mixed polarizing reaction. People are either loving it or people are either hating it. So,
I think Love Lies Bleeding will eventually turn a profit. I don't know what the budget is on either of these movies. It's really hard to find.
All I know is that the director had a $2.5 million budget for her previous film, Saint Maud. And then from what I could find Love Lies Bleeding, she was given multiple times 2.5. So that's all
could
I could
be
find. Could
be 100 billion, Anthony, at that point. It could be a $100 billion movie.
It could be 10 million. It could be 20 million. Not really sure yet. But
my guess, it's probably like 15, 20 by the looks like of it. Same thing with American Society of Magical. That looks like a 30, like 20, 30 million dollar
I believe
movie.
That was about 40 million budget. It could be something like that.
I couldn't find the numbers, but
I would
just
say
visually,
American Society definitely had a bigger budget for sure.
Probably because they're shooting a lot of exteriors in cities. That's not cheap.
It's a pretty big. There's a pretty good amount of visual effects in that film, just so you can tell from the trailer.
And just the where they shot in terms of these massive exteriors, shutting down city blocks like that. It's not cheap.
I would guess. I mean, I haven't seen the film, but Love Lies Bleeding probably has the $10 to $15 million budget.
Yeah, wouldn't be surprised. I think that one has a better chance of word of mouth making money. The latter one, it's just got a horrible reaction on the internet.
Awful.
Everybody is bashing this movie.
I mean, we said when the trailer dropped for this film a few months ago, we were both like, where does this fit in? And culturally, it doesn't look like a movie anybody wants to see. And it was just tonally so off and just a strange story to tell in that way. And the trailers, I mean, it had, you could say, an interesting tone, but then it turned into a rom-com. And I was just like, I remember watching that trailer being like, what even is this movie? And it seems like audiences are saying the same thing.
Yeah. Well, audiences will let you know whether they want to see your movie or not. And the latter two right now, it doesn't seem to have much traction. Imaginary, decent, and, you know, $5 million on your opening weekend. Not terrible for a $10 million movie.
No, it's the second weekend.
Second week.
It made $9 million last week.
Okay, so it's in the green. Imaginary is already in the profit.
Yeah.
Good. All right, cool.
It's doing decent.
Let's move on to some cool stuff. So we've been doing a lot of events lately. If you've been following us on social media,
we've been running around.
We've been so busy, man. I'm exhausted, honestly. Exhausted. And so our first event we did was we saw a very early screening of The Fall Guy, David Leitch's new film starring Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt. And we saw it like almost 2 months before it comes out. It doesn't come out until May 3rd. We saw it on March 14th or 13th. And we really, really enjoyed this film. Ryan Gosling and the cast, Emily Blunt, Stephanie Hsu, Winston Duke, as well as the stunt team. They're all there. They introduced the movie. It was an awesome experience, and the movie lives up to the hype. I liked it more than Bullet Train. I really enjoyed Bullet Train. That was David Leitch's last film. But I think this movie was just such a good time. We'll post a review once it comes out. We did a little bit of a spoiler-free review on Letterboxd Recap on Thursday, on Friday. But I can't wait for you all to check this out, especially if you work in the film industry or in TV industry. It's very accurate to what sets are like. It's a movie about filmmaking, but like very accurate. And I really enjoyed the stunts and the stunt work in it. And I thought it was an absolute blast.
It was a good time. And man, Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt are just glorious in person.
They are.
They're stunning.
Their chemistry is insanely good on camera too.
It was a great event.
It was fun. I think you're all going to really enjoy this movie. You really will. I can't wait for you all to check it out. And another event we went to Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire.
The New Empire.
We cannot talk about it. We are under social embargo, an embargo for reviewing the film. But we had a great experience. Thank you to Legendary and Warner Brothers and IMAX for letting us experience that film in person. We got to chat with the director, which was really cool. And you got to definitely check it out on the biggest screen possible with IMAX.
Careful, there's a sniper dot on your chest
right now. Like I said, I didn't review it.
We will be doing an episode on it, and it'll be after the film is released, so stay tuned for that episode.
They had a great spread. Yeah. The food was terrific.
We got wined and dined.
Oh, it was really nice.
Incredible food, and we also got to see some really cool, for the first time we've seen this, we got to see concept art as well as props for the film in a huge room, and it was just really fantastic to see. And also the CGI visual effects work they had on a screen on a loop. And it was really just fascinating to see the bare bones behind the scenes of the film and what led into the actual picture that we ended up seeing. So it was just so cool to see that look behind the curtain with the director who gave us a tour of all the stuff, which was just such a fun experience.
And then tonight, we are going to see Immaculate, the new horror film starring Sydney Sweeney, and she will be there introducing the film.
It's going to be in a church.
So I will be wearing binoculars. You know, probably pretty far away.
No, she's gonna sit in between us, man.
I wish. She would never.
It's actually probably not a good idea.
She would never sit with us plebs. We're peasants, man.
What's a pleb?
I am always a pleb.
A pleb.
Plebeian. So in ancient Rome times, you were either a patrician or a pleb.
Oh,
plebeian.
Okay.
The plebs were the lower class society.
Gotcha.
Patricians were the higher class society.
Gotcha.
And it was a very dramatic change. You know, it's like you are a peasant or you are an elite. Yeah. There's no in between, really.
I doubt she thinks you're a peasant, man. She won't think you're a peasant. I hope not.
I really do hope not.
But we're going to be seeing it inside of an actual church. It's a church that holds events most commonly for candlelit orchestral performances.
Very cool.
I've always wanted to go there.
Oh, they have like the...
That's where it is. Where,
like the John Williams music or Hans Zimmer's music.
Listen to it by candlelight. Yeah. There's like 500 candles scattered across the altar.
All right, so we don't have to worry about pews for seats.
Yeah, we won't be sitting in pews.
No wooden pews.
There will be chairs. No, we'll be kneeling the entire time.
Let us proclaim the mystery of faith.
Optionally, you can get the body of Christ optionally during the film.
Amen.
You might have to cleanse yourself with that after watching this.
I wonder if they have food there and it's just wine and bread and fish.
Holy water, wine and bread.
And fish.
You don't have fish at church.
No, but it's very real. It's for the Bible.
Yeah, but I know it's from the Bible, but
Jesus.
It's not like we eat fish at church.
No, I wasn't comparing it to church. I was comparing it to the Bible, like the main food.
Oh, I get it.
Main food groups in the Bible, wine, fish, and bread. There was no like brie cheese, so it was just like those three things.
There was no Gouda.
Yeah.
All right, next up. The next big release for films to get on your radar, Ghostbusters, The Frozen Empire, comes out on March 22nd, this upcoming weekend. It looks like a lot of fun. I love the new trailer, and I really like the posters. The marketing is doing a very good job of selling it, and I like that the adults are getting involved, as well as bringing back all the OG guys and gals. So Ghostbusters, The Frozen Empire, the big release this upcoming weekend. I'm definitely going to go see it in IMAX.
Yeah, I really liked Afterlife, and I think... It looks like it from the trailer and the posters that Paul Rudd is sort of the new lead, which I think is the right decision to make. He was one of the main characters in the first film, but I think putting the gun in his hands, he's clearly front and center on the poster.
Yeah.
I think that's the smart decision because Paul Rudd's so likable. Everyone loves him, and I think it's the good move. If he's the lead of the movie, I think that's the move.
Also, he's about the same age as the original fans of the original film.
Yeah, so
it makes sense.
I think it makes sense. Of course, the kids are still there, and the older group are still there, but I think Paul Rudd being your centerpiece.
I think it's going to be Paul Rudd and Carrie Coon are going to be really leaders.
I think they have to be the centerpiece of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then...
Bad news,
Batman Part 2 has been pushed back to October 2nd, 2026, an entire year from its previously pushed back release date.
So, such a bummer.
Pretty bad.
Now, why was the Batman Part 2, why has it been delayed an entire year all the way to October 2026, Anthony? Well, last year's entertainment strikes didn't help the situation, and the rumor is the sequel's delay is due to a lack of available stages for filming, as Warner Brothers was deciding on timing. Stages ended up being reserved for other projects, leading to this situation. So this is common for filmmaking. You know, you have to reserve sound stages for months at a time, and you have to get on the list. You have to get in there early. You have to build your sets.
You have to put your deposit down,
too. You have to put a deposit down, too. So I feel like they were probably up in the air of when they wanted to release the film, when they wanted to shoot, scheduling with all the actors, and Pattinson's a busy guy. And then obviously the strike didn't help because they probably weren't finished with the script yet. And obviously Matt Reeves...
They couldn't do anything.
Couldn't write. Yeah. Couldn't write. All these writers are like, I couldn't write. Bullshit. Like, you would have been writing at home. Like,
no way you got a great idea and didn't write it down.
I'm not saying Matt Reeves was writing, but I'm just saying, like, you can, like, write it, jot something down in a notebook.
Yeah,
you know.
Absolutely. There's nothing wrong with that.
But, so obviously everything got delayed. It's being pushed to 2026, so it's probably going to film in 2025, maybe, or hopefully sooner. So they just had an issue getting sound stages and stages for building and filming the scenes, as well as not too much to worry because in 2024, at the end of the year, we'll still have the Penguin TV series will release on Max. So we will have some Batman universe content coming out this year. And rumor is Pattinson is going to be in an episode maybe. Maybe he'll show up as Batman. I would hope it's not too much because I don't want to dilute the character that much by putting him in a TV show too often. But it'd be really cool. So we will have content from that verse. It also makes sense because the Batman coming out in 2026 means that Superman, when it comes out in 2025, is just by itself as the only DC big property that year.
Yeah, it's interesting. They only have one big DC release in 2025.
Film-wise, they'll have TV shows.
Also, I mean, as long as they get it right, I'm fine with waiting.
Yeah, it's cool.
As long as it's as good as it can be. And keep in mind, I mean, we waited 4 years between Dark Knight and Dark Knight Rises. So, I mean, Nolan always did a film in between.
True.
So we did it. I think it's better not to turn out movies, sequels, like, constantly. I think it's good to let the audiences really want them. So I don't think it's a horrible thing. Obviously, this is much, like, 3 years would have been fine, but it is what it is. As long as they get it right and they make a great sequel, I'm okay with waiting another year, couple years.
I'm devastated! I'm devastated.
Why don't you tell us about it?
God damn it. Nah, it's not that big of a deal.
But speaking of Superman, what's was just recently announced about the film is James Gunn said that he's shooting the entire film in the IMAX format.
Let's go, baby.
Yeah, IMAX cameras the whole time.
I feel like Hollywood just listens to our show.
Honestly, we have been on IMAX since day one.
Day one, baby.
And on top of that, so A24 is paired up with IMAX, and they are going to start releasing previous films of theirs in the IMAX format monthly. And upcoming announcements were Hereditary, Uncut Gems. and something else that escapes my mind right now.
Was it Ex Machina?
Ex Machina, yes, thank you.
Oh, fuck
so
yeah.
You,
at your butts, I'm seeing those.
I want to see all those. That's what's so powerful about the IMAX format is it will let you watch even movies that you've loved already to see them in a new way that you never could have before. And so this is opening it up. I mean, Paul Thomas Anderson's next film going to be released in IMAX. A PTA film.
Megalopolis.
In IMAX. Megalopolis. IMAX. It's amazing. It's so great to see. It doesn't have to be an action movie. Doesn't have to be a big blockbuster spectacle. These intimate films from filmmakers that we love, it would be just as powerful to see their films in IMAX in that huge format and to be really enraptured by the image. So I just can't wait to see all these great films in IMAX.
Enraptured.
It's a good word.
It's a good word. Word of the day. Let's move on to some more news. Deadpool and Wolverine news, the third film in the Deadpool franchise. The rumor is Henry Cavill is going to play a Wolverine variant. And I think this is just great news.
Perfect
casting. If he's going to be a variant, even if it's just for one scene, fine by me. That sounds awesome as hell.
James,
as long as we can see his chest.
I was about to say.
As long as we can see Henry Cavill's hairy chest, then I'm fine with it. But if his chest isn't popped, if Henry Cavill's chest isn't popped as Wolverine variant,
he better not be wearing Deadpool a suit. Wolverine,
I'm walking out of the theater.
Pants only, Cavill.
If
pants
I can only see his neck and face, I'm leaving the theater. I'm leaving the theater. I want chest popped, forearms.
That grizzly hair all over.
I want a beard. You listening, MCU? Pop his shirt. You don't have to take it off. Just pop it.
It's great. Pop. I think it's a great casting, and I think he's perfect as the character. And, I mean, why not just make a new Wolverine series with him?
That should have worked.
People would love that.
That would
People
work.
People would love him.
That would be the biggest hit of the year, whatever year it
People
comes out.
People would love that.
But a good movie.
Yeah.
A good movie. Henry Cavill is Wolverine.
Fuck
Holy
yeah.
crap.
Speaking of another hotly anticipated film, we have the remake of The Crow, which just dropped its first trailer, directed by Rupert Sanders, starring Bill Skarsgård and FKA Twigs and Danny Houston. This is a new version of the story, and it cast Bill Skarsgård as the young lover brought back from the dead to try and save the soul of his fellow murdered partner. This trailer, obviously everybody's been waiting. They dropped a couple photos last week, and we were like, okay, trailer's coming soon. Very anticipated. Everybody's been curious what exactly the tone, style, and story and direction is going to be. I think it looks pretty good. I think a problem with the trailer, I feel like I saw the movie.
Yeah.
I feel like I saw every
in the trailer.
I feel like I saw the climax. I feel like I saw the third act. I feel like I saw the entire story of this character in the trailer. And I was just like, it's a 3 minute long trailer.
Yeah.
Why are we making 3 minute long trailers?
The whole movie's in the trailer.
You guys could just do like a cool supercut, set up the story, and then a quick supercut for 20 seconds of your best footage. We'll go to the theater. Everybody's curious. But I felt like I watched that fucking movie in this trailer.
Yeah, that's a problem a lot of studios are doing, man. Especially one like this where it's a remake. You really got to sell people on this movie. I think they just show too much sometimes.
Yeah.
And I thought the same thing, like, oh, this is obviously the climax of the movie right here.
I was just so confused why they're giving so much away. Because you want to make people talk about it and add to their curiosity and mystery, but I just don't get it. I think that the design of the character, it looks good. I will say, though, in this interpretation, they mentioned that he's got a godlike power and he can't die. If your character can't die, then where are the stakes of the film?
Well, that's the crow, dude.
Yeah.
That's the crow.
Yeah, so he can't die in the other one?
No, he can't
die. So where are the stakes coming from?
Well,
if he can't die...
He has to... It's just vengeance.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yes. It's just fun.
Is there like a time thing to save the girl? Is that what it is? Is there a time crunch?
I'm trying to think. The Crow, is there a time crunch in The Crow? I can't remember if there's a time crunch.
It look, maybe they made a time crunch with the murdered girlfriend.
Maybe, but that's The Crow. The Crow can't die.
Okay.
You can shoot him. You can stab him. He always survives.
You can poke him in the eye.
Yeah, you can poke him in the eye. It's fine. So that's the character, you know.
What's your reaction to the trailer?
I
think that's the whole internet.
It's just like, I'm first not of sure. All, I thought it'd be something. I thought the tone would be a little different. It just feels too much like John Wick to me. It feels like a John Wick movie. The first Crow movie has so much style. But I understand that that movie came out in 1994. It really tapped into pop culture in terms of grunge and that visceral, gritty quality. It looks like a music video from the 1990s. And, you know, he's ripping guitar on top of buildings and there's lightning. And it looks like Gotham. It's cool. These really cool effects and miniatures and really using the Crow as a character. And I love the first Crow because Draven, he's like as much a villain as everybody else, but he's mad, he's demented, he's always laughing and hysterical, and he's like a maniac, you know,
he's
what
maniacal.
I mean? It's super fun. And this version of Draven, I'm not saying that it's fun to die and be resurrected, but it just looks like it's a revenge movie just like the other one, but it doesn't seem like it has that same style. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's the contemporary version. He kind of just looks like he's got like the fuckboy look. He's got the cross earring and the tats and the haircuts. So I guess that's contemporary in terms of hip hop and popular music, and a lot of bands and a lot of musicians kind of have that style. So I understand how the style will be different. I wasn't expecting it to have the gothic and grunge tone of the original.
But you're hoping for more style?
I'm not saying that it doesn't have style. I just don't know how I feel about it yet. But I want to see it. It looks like a bloody good time. It looks like a cool action flick.
Yeah.
And
so speaking of, I think they gave away a lot of the great kills in it.
I think they gave
away
too much of it.
Yeah. Like a lot of the great kills, I'm like, you should save this for the movie, for the theaters to be like, audiences' reactions should be saved for this.
Yeah, I want to see it. But I would be more excited if they didn't show so much in the trailer.
Yeah, I agree. I think there was just too much revealed.
Too much revealed. It is what it is, you know. It looks cool. It looks very different. Obviously, like I said, you can't have the same movie. You can't make the same. You can't capture what the original Crow did.
Yeah.
But I don't love the makeup either, because I don't like how he doesn't have a white face.
So here's the thing: the makeup without the white, it does have Bruce Wayne, the Batman vibes.
Yeah, it doesn't look like the Crow. That's the thing. It doesn't look like the Crow without a white face.
Yeah. I think they wanted to make sure the tattoos were still visible.
Yeah, but like that's part of the look.
Yeah.
So
we'll see. We'll see. We will see.
Let's move on to some news. So Scream 7 is actually going to happen. Neve Campbell has signed on to the next film. This was revealed because she posted an image on Instagram of the script called Untitled Scream 7 Film. No news on the plot or other cast members
yet. They did that fast, by the way.
Obviously, Melissa Barrera and Jenna Ortega are off the project. Melissa Barrera was fired after making some posts, as well as Jenna Ortega said that she had scheduling conflicts, but left the project, we can assume, of her own accord. So Scream 7 seemed to be doomed, but then it seemed like it only a matter of time until Scream 7 went to development again. Kevin Williamson, who wrote the last two Scream movies, will be directing the film. I believe it'll be his directorial debut as well. So Scream 7 is actually going to happen, and they must have pulled out the checkbook for Neve, because they wouldn't pay her for the signing on to Scream 7 originally, before all the blowback and all the firings and all the leavings. And now they're actually paying her, so I guarantee you they wrote her like a $10 million check.
Neve walked into that agency, and she walked into that studio. She's like, all right, here's my paycheck.
I have the power now. So Neve Campbell has so much power. It's only getting made because of her, which should have been the first place.
The irony that they didn't want to pay her. Now they're in her hand, basically. Like she got the power back. It's interesting.
So Scream 7
very
is
ironic.
Back.
Damn, they wasted no time.
They must have had two versions of the script.
I thought they should have waited a couple of years to just let things blow over.
Gotta pay the rent.
Man, I'm very curious to see what the cultural reaction will be to the film.
That's probably why they're doing it so fast, is because it's still in everybody's minds and everyone's thinking about it.
Well, I'm saying, will people be against it?
Well, at least it's going to be talked about, and people will see it.
Yeah.
I think people will see it.
Something people definitely would see if it gets made. Our next story, Nick Cage just confirmed in an interview that he's in talks with Sony to adapt a live-action Spider-Man Noir film series or TV series. Not sure yet. It's not set in stone, but he said he has been talking to the studio and producers about bringing that character that he so famously did in both the animated in the animated film to life in live action. I think it would be a lot of fun.
Spider-Man Noir.
I think it would be really fun.
Congratulations on pronouncing Noir.
I took my time with it. I took my time.
Noir.
Noir.
There you go, man.
I got it, man.
Cool.
And you can accomplish anything, guys. Listen to me.
Anything is possible.
If you put your mind to it, you can achieve anything. Look what I just did.
Just like the sequel, the third film in the Venom franchise finally has a name.
Venom.
Venom.
It's just called Venom.
Just six 18, M's. 18 M's. Venom, The Last Dance will be the third film in the trilogy. It finally has a title instead of just Venom.
Venom. Hopefully they can make a good one for once.
I liked Let There Be Carnage.
We all know you like Let There
I
Be Carnage.
I will die on that hill. I had a good time at that movie.
You and Paul Thomas Anderson are the only people who did.
We have great taste. Oh, PTA liked that movie?
Venom. Yeah, he said he liked it.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'll have to talk about it with him sometime. If I ever meet him. If I ever meet him,
you're going
to
bring up Venom, Let There
I'll
Be Carnage?
Like, bro, Venom, Let There Be Carnage, right? He'll be like, bro, yes.
Goated. On God, for
real.
I'm
not saying it's the best movie of that year, but I enjoyed it. I had a good time.
Yeah. I had an all right time. It was okay. I didn't like it.
I thought it was fun.
It was fine.
Well, you know what sounds like fun?
What's that?
Kinds of Kindness. The next film from Yorgos Lanthimos, which already has been filmed. They released a teaser image of the cast list and the title and announced a release of June 2024. That means in 3 months, we can see Yorgos Lanthimos' next film starring Emma Stone, Jesse Plemons, Willem Dafoe, Margot Qualley, Hong Chau, Joe Alwyn, Mamadou Athi, and Hunter Schafer.
It's funny, all those complicated names and you messed up on Margaret. You said Margot Qualley.
Did I say Margot? Yeah. I don't know.
You messed up on an easy one.
Margaret Qualley. Anyways.
I'm looking forward to this. I don't know anything about this film at all.
No one knows. The rumor is it's an anthology film possibly, but I have no idea if that's true or not.
I found a couple images online of Emma Stone and Jesse Plemons in Margaret Qualley. It looks like, because she has a minor role in Poor Things, and it looks like she has a big lead role in this film, Qualley. So I'm looking forward to her.
I've already seen another Yorgos film.
Fuck yeah, man. That's crazy. All right, next up, some Star Wars news. The Star Wars Rogue Squadron, which was recently pushed aside, is back. And Patty Jenkins says she's back working on the adaptation of the video game. This is the video game we grew up playing, right? With the fighter jets and stuff?
Yeah, this is about the squadron.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
That's a sick game. That was a fun-ass game.
Good game. So they cut the cord on it for 2 years because Patty was supposed... And then Patty was supposed to do Wonder Woman 3. And then Wonder Woman 3 got shut down. And then she went to Lucasfilm. Lucasfilm's like, hey, we should put this back on. We should make this again. So,
cool. Yeah.
It's because she's not making Wonder Woman 3 that she's going to make Star Wars Rogue Squadron.
I think it's cool if they focus on films like this that are not to do with the Jedi or the Sith. And it's just a cool environment within the world. I think that they should do more of these.
Star Wars needs to get a movie in theaters ASAP. Yes. That's what they have to do. And let's just stay on that topic for now because the Mandalorian and Grogu film got announced like 10 days ago. And that will be directed by Jon Favreau. And he'll produce it. Also produced by Kathleen Kennedy and Dave Filoni.
That was announced like a month ago, bro.
Yeah, well,
what are you smoking?
I just want to say, like, I wanted to bring it up again.
You said it was announced 10 days ago.
Because it's going into production in 2024. In Disney, they're just sitting on this gold mine of theaters. Like, they haven't put out a movie in theaters for Star Wars since The Last Jedi.
Rise of Skywalker.
Rise of Skywalker. I'm sorry, I get it mixed up. Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, it's the last Star Wars one.
What was that, 2018?
2019.
5 years without a Star Wars movie?
Damn, that was not their plan. Remember when they bought Star Wars? They were like, yeah, a movie every year.
And then they're like, happen. Let's make 17 shows.
Remember that? Fuck movies. Fuck theaters.
I get the streaming wars happened and COVID happened. Lockdown happened. Everyone got scared. Every streamer was like, oh, we have to make TV shows. But
yeah.
I think they all shot themselves in the foot at the same time.
I love how they abandoned Grogu for like 2 episodes and then he's back and then they have a movie out with him too.
They better hope that they can milk the audience because I know a lot of people did not like season 3 of The Mandalorian.
I don't think anybody did. I don't think anyone did.
I don't know.
No,
but Jon Favreau's directing, so I got confidence in him.
If he's in control, I think that it's in good hands.
I think
sure.
It'll be good.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to Dev Patel's debut directorial feature. Monkey Man premiered at South by Southwest last week, and it's getting rave reviews. It's supposed to be excellent. The trailer slaps. It looks so cool. One of the most interesting films of the year, clearly. And I cannot wait to check this out once it gets released.
Yeah, it's one of my most anticipated. And what's interesting with South by is the films that play there often get released pretty quickly because this film's coming out moderately soon. And, I mean, Love Lies Bleeding just premiered there, and it's already out in theaters. So that's what's different from South by as opposed to most festivals where you have to, like, wait months for distribution after you get to get in hand. And it's just cool to hear the reactions and then be able to go see the film pretty close to that.
It seems like a lot of films at South by already have been purchased.
Yeah, they already have distribution.
Yeah, they already have distribution lined up. So, and it's an American domestic festival. So it's like, all right, let's time it for right before it comes out in theaters. Let's do a promotion with South by.
It's probably because they didn't compete. They're just features.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably what it is. But I love this trailer, and I can't wait to see it. It's definitely one of the most anticipated of the year. And he had a – did you see his speech he gave in front of the crowd? It was really great.
Yeah, I watched some of it.
What a cool guy.
Yeah.
Cool dude.
Very cool.
All right, next up, another film that is getting reactions at South by Southwest is Alex Garland's Civil War. This just premiered at the festival, and it's getting divided response from audiences. Some say it's a masterpiece, and some say – quite the opposite. I saw a great tweet, and it said, challenge, don't call a movie a masterpiece at a film festival. critics are pretty favorable of the film with an 88% critic score on Rotten Tomatoes.
But that's only 26 reviews.
26 reviews. So once it gets to about 100 reviews, you'll have a better idea of the quality. And this is A24's largest film to date with a $75 million budget and probably a $25 million marketing budget as well. So this is a big film for them. And it's getting, I mean, mixed reviews. I was expecting this when you make a film on this topic and this subject matter. I'm sure they weren't expecting overwhelming acclaim from everybody.
It comes out in a month on April 12th. I saw a funny tweet where someone said, Civil War is like a Civil War movie fused with an A24 film. I'm like, what the fuck does that mean?
People just think, like, it's just like it's a silly just a studio.
It's a silly headline.
It's just a studio.
Silly headline.
It's not like they make a one kind of movie.
I'm very curious because I love many of Alex Garland's films. I really do. You know, Ex Machina is one of my favorite movies of the century. 28 Days Later is terrific. Annihilation's terrific. So I'm very curious about this film. But I will hold judgment until I see it.
Yeah. Yeah, hold that judgment, man.
I shall.
Hold it. Next up, we got a trailer for Franklin from Apple TV, which is tells the tale of Benjamin Franklin's journey to France with his grandson to help convince the French government to join America in the American Revolution, which is not something I knew about that Ben Franklin did.
Very cool.
He's on like a mission to do it and convince not just the government, but to get the French people on the side of America or against the Brits. And Ben Franklin's being played by Michael Douglas, and his grandson's being played by Noah Shoup, who you've seen in a bunch of things lately. A very good young actor.
Stranger Things, right?
Yeah. No, no. The Ford vs. Ferrari kid.
Oh! Yeah.
Noah Shoup. Wait. No, I said his name wrong.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's the Stranger Things kid's name.
Yeah. Noah Shoup. J-U-P-E. And then Noah Shoup. Noah Schnapp is the Stranger Things kid.
Noah Schnapp.
All these Noahs, man. It's hard to keep up.
Schnapp.
Schnapp? Schnosky?
It's like Schnapps. Schnapp.
Schnosky's.
Schnapp.
The trailer actually looks really good. It does. The world building, the cinematography, visual effects.
You know what would be cool?
What?
If it was an action movie. Like Ben Franklin like goes and fucks shit up.
Like Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter.
And then he's like, you're coming with me, France.
he saves France from Britain. It's a story I didn't know about.
It's pretty cool.
That Ben Franklin did. I mean, the guy did so much in his life, and I'm sure things like this, I mean, you don't even read about them, but it's a fascinating idea for a series, and it looks very good, honestly. It looks very good.
Next up, Ari Aster's next movie starring Joaquin Phoenix, Austin Butler, Pedro Pascal, and Emma Stone has begun filming. It's called Eddington, and it's a contemporary Western.
That's all we know about it. Everything. No other details.
Is Pedro Pascal in every movie, or is it just me?
He's getting there, man.
About 90% of film.
No, that's not true. He's not in any of the movies we talked about.
Yeah, 90%. That's just the 10%. He's in 90% of movies.
He's actually in Arthur the King. He plays the dog, Arthur.
Yeah. It's all visual effects, motion capture.
He plays Paul Atreides.
He's
the worm.
He's in Franklin. He does mocap of Michael Douglas as Benjamin Franklin.
He plays Shia LaBeouf in Dune Part 2.
Yes, he is Shia LaBeouf. He's Chani, actually. That was actually Pedro Pascal.
Great acting. Great acting. No, I'm kidding. That was obviously very talented Zendaya.
Yes, of course.
Almost got canceled there, man.
For what? It's just a joke. We all know we love...
You know people take jokes very seriously.
I love Zendaya. She's so talented.
Moving on. She's a wicked talented guy.
Like we talked about earlier, we mentioned Alex Garland in 28 Days Later. It's 100% confirmed from Cillian Murphy that he, Danny Boyle, and Alex Garland are going to make 28 Years Later.
Did he say about acting in it?
Yes, he's going to be in it.
He's going to star in it?
I watched an interview. He said he's going to be in it.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah, he said...
Because before he was just producing on the table.
I watched this 10 days. It was an interview from 10 days ago.
Uh-huh.
He said it's happening.
He said, James, I'm going to be in 28 Years Later.
Oh, yeah. 20, yeah. He said it to me.
He said, James, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Don't tell anyone.
He's telling me.
Keep it between us.
Yeah. Whoops. Sorry, Cillian. He didn't make me sign an NDA. Gotcha.
All right, next up, Rebel Moon Part 2 is coming out very soon. Zack Snyder teased rated R and PG-13 versions, saying they're completely different films, just like the first one. And Rebel Moon unrated, the rated R version comes out soon, right? In June.
Yeah, very soon.
Yeah, in June. I mean,
he described it in the way that he did a radar version and PG-13 version. He said the PG-13 version was for Netflix and the radar version will be for him, and it'll get a separate release at a later date after part two comes out. And the way he described it in the interview was he said that because he's so well known for the director's cuts of his movies, that he made that deal with Netflix where, like, you can do that, you can do your other version, but also can you make a PG-13 version?
He basically doubled down on that idea, that phenomenon.
Yeah. Yeah, and he said, he described the rated R versions as being much better films and much different than the PG-13 movies.
I mean, I don't know. I'm from Rebel Moon Part 1, what I didn't like was the story. And the visuals were great, and the action was okay. From what I saw some of the interview, too, and not interview, but conversation. He said it's going to be gorier, rated R, hard violence. And I'm like, that even adding hard violence and a lot of gore and badass actions are not going to really help the story.
I'll watch the rated R versions. I'll check them out. Wait until then.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you can watch them back to back.
True. Exactly.
Yeah.
Moving on next. Teen Titans, the beloved franchise, is now getting a live action film and has joined the lineup at the new DCU.
It took a while. I figured they would have done this years ago to make live-action films of these characters in this series.
Yeah.
But they've had the TV show on... Where's the Arrowverse play?
CW.
And on Max.
They had animated one, too.
Yeah, animated one. It's a big property, so I'm surprised it took them this long, and I think that it could be a big hit for them.
Mm-hmm.
People love the Teen Titans.
They cast it well. People love it well. Yeah, I think it'd be really good.
And then you get a great... assimilation of characters. Really great characters everyone loves.
A massive verse.
Yeah, and then you can start them young. Work them young. Milk them for decades worth of movies.
Well, until they're not teens anymore.
Yeah, until they're not teens anymore. Then you're going to really pay them. But I think it could be really big hit for DC and Warner Brothers.
Yes, sir.
Next up, more images were released for Unfrosted, Jerry Seinfeld's Pop-Tarts movie. The best image of all is Hugh Grant, who plays Tony the Tiger for the marketing campaign of the product, and he's wearing a Tony the Tiger suit in the image. He's like holding the head of Tony the Tiger, which is just, I can't wait to see that. I mean, I'm sold on the movie just to see that.
Did you know that Hugh Grant auditioned for a role in Seinfeld years and years ago?
Really? Do you know what role?
No, that was just part of the article that I read that he was part of an auditioning process for an episode or a couple episodes.
Wow.
I don't think he got it
because I don't think he's in it.
I don't think so either. Last bit of news, some Disney stuff. According to Disney, they have made $25 billion from Star Wars and Marvel since their purchase of both IPs. Marvel, they purchased back in 2009. Star Wars, they purchased in 2011, 13?
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that. Marvel, they bought back in 2009.
Wow, they made a good amount of profit on these.
So specifically, Frozen and Toy Story have their biggest return on investments, their largest ROIs. From Frozen, they've made a 9.9 times return on investment, which is absurd.
Merchandise, baby.
And then Toy Story, they've made 5 times an ROI. So you would think that it would be the Marvel stuff, but it's actually Toy Story and Frozen is their most profitable profitable IPs.
We've talked about that, like when, especially when Frozen 1 and 2 came out, especially Frozen 1, like
massive.
Our niece in particular, she had like a dozen Frozen items, whether it be blankets or toys or cups, anything. They're making a boatload on the merchandise. It's just generating so much cash flow. It's insane.
So much cash.
Disney has always made most of its revenue from merchandise and then amusement parks. And the films make a good amount of money, but we're just talking like a handful of billion per year at the most. Whereas merchandise, you're making upwards of close to $20 billion per year on merchandise. Maybe, yeah, $20, $25 billion per year on all the merchandise at Disney.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always been their number one, that and amusement parks.
Quite the profit. Well, I don't know how much of its profit. Probably like half of its profit.
A good amount of it, yeah.
It's going to be a good amount of its profit.
Yeah, a good amount.
Because they spent money to make money.
Yeah. But man, people love that merch.
And what's nuts is they only purchased Star Wars for like, what was it, $4.3 billion from George Lucas?
Yeah, not that much.
It's just a little over $4
billion. Yeah.
And they turned it into, they've made, I think, $12 million specifically.
Well, they had the giant machine that Lucasfilm never had. Mm-hmm. That's how they just generated so much money from it. Lucasfilm, big studio, but nothing in comparison to Disney. So they were just a behemoth in comparison.
Well, then incorporating it in all their parks was massive because, like, Galaxy's Edge is so cool. And it's just a crazy experience in how they've been able to do that at Disneyland now in Disney World, which is awesome.
It's all from Grogu.
I mean, Rise of the Resistance is crazy cool.
I want to do that.
It's the coolest ride ever, man.
Did you do it?
Yeah, I've done it.
No way.
It's so fucking cool.
Is it?
It might be the best ride I've ever done in my life.
Are the characters all animatronic?
In that one?
Yeah.
They'll have crew members, like that's what they call the employees at Disney. They're all crew. A lot of them will be acting. Like, this is the only ride where they take it seriously. Like, they're jerks to you, which is fun. It's part of it because they're all part of...
like, ushering you in rooms
and
stuff.
Yeah, and then while you're in line and telling you which rooms to go in, they're dicks. Because that's who they're supposed to be. They're playing, you know, part of Darth Vader's
crew. Fascist military.
Yeah, exactly. And... but the ride itself is really incredible. It's very immersive. It's massive. They have AT-ATs there, like three of them. They're like 40 feet tall.
Really?
It's so cool. It's the coolest ride I've ever been on in my life.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that.
It's absolutely incredible.
Did you build a lightsaber?
No, I didn't build a lightsaber. You can. They have, like, really nice ones there. But because Galaxy's Edge, you just walk around. It's just like Star Wars world.
Mm-hmm.
And they
hug Chewie?
He was not there when I was there. He was sick. They're intermittently there.
He had the flu.
Yeah, he had the flu. But I saw some stormtroopers. There's a bunch of stormtroopers in Rise of Resistance when you walk in. It's fucking it's mental how big this ride is.
Mental? You definitely were in England.
Cool. It's very cool. It's the best ride I've ever been on in my life.
Wow. Ever?
Ever.
Ever. Man, I always enjoyed the Batman and Robin ride at Six Flags. And the Superman ride was
sick, that's
too.
Just a roller coaster. This is like a whole different kind of experience. Yeah. It's insanely immersive as well as having great ride elements to it.
You know what they should do? They should do a Mad Max immersive experience.
That'd be fun. Fire everywhere.
They could do it in L.A.
Just cover us all with oil and gasoline.
Guzzling. They spray you with silver and platinum.
Yeah, dude. We should hit up Disneyland sometime. It's just crazy expensive now. It's like over $200 for a day pass.
That's a lot, man.
Yeah.
And then what, like an extra 50 for the express?
Yeah, it's called Lightning Lane. So you pay, it's $35, I think, for Lightning Lane. But then there are some rides, like Rise of the Resistance. I think the Cars one, too, because they're so popular. You have to pay an extra 15 to get Lightning Pass just for that ride.
Man, and even Universal is expensive. I can't remember the last time I went to an amusement park.
But it's honestly worth it because those rides are so awesome and the waits can be like over 100 minutes, like 120 minutes for a ride.
Is the wait ever worth it?
Except for Galaxy Express. I always do Lightning Express.
Nice. Smart man.
It's good to go.
The last time I went to amusement park was, I think, with Mom, Universal Studios, and we went to Harry Potter World.
We should go to Disneyland, man. The most I waited was like 20 minutes.
That's not bad at all.
Not bad at all.
Plus, summer's around the corner.
But then another great ride at Disneyland right now is Guardians of the Galaxy. Mm-hmm. It is sick. It's so fun because it used to be the Tower of Terror.
Yeah.
So it's the elevator that goes up and down. It is insanely fun. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was the best ride there until...
It's a real hoot.
Until Rise of Resistance showed up.
Mm-hmm.
It was the best ride. It's so fun.
Fuck yeah.
So fucking fun.
I wonder if they're... Did you do the Avatar World?
No, that wasn't there.
No.
That's not Disneyland.
Oh,
that must be Disney World, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know where that is.
Do you know about the Ministry of Magic that's being built?
In UK or in Florida?
In Florida.
No way.
They're building like a one-to-one scale, like the entire Ministry of Magic.
That's amazing.
And a giant, huge set. You're going to be able to walk through the entire Ministry of Magic. They'll have the centerpiece statues. They'll have all the fireplaces.
Indoors or outdoors?
Indoors.
Wow.
They're building the entire thing.
That's got to be like 50 feet tall at least.
It's massive. Five stories. It's going to be the entire set. You'll be able to. Cool. Yeah. I can't wait. I want to do that.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll go to Florida just for that. All right, that wraps this week's movie news, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning into Raiders of the Lost Podcast. Stay tuned for upcoming episodes. We're doing an episode on Poor Things tomorrow.
Great one.
Very exciting stuff, as well as check out our early episodes on The Fall Guy, which will be in a couple weeks, and then Godzilla X Kong in a couple weeks. So can't wait for you all to check those movies out. And we got some other stuff in the
works. We're also doing 20 Best Westerns on Wednesday.
There we go.
20 Best Westerns.
Should be a good one. Bow, bow, bow. The first one was like, what was that sound? Bow, bow, bow.
Fuck yeah.
All right, take care, everybody.
See you next time.
Thank you for watching Raiders of the Lost Podcast. Be sure to hit that subscribe button, hit the like button as well, notifications for sure. Listen to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, everywhere you can listen to podcasts. And be sure to check out this other content we have on our YouTube channel.